give God a praise. That's why we're here. That's why we're here, folks. Look at the person next to you. Just slap them in the arm. Say, it's a good thing you're here. Get them going today. Get them going. Well, let me add my good morning. We've been in the conference here, and as Pastor said, I was here last year about this time. I'm becoming a regular in Malaysia. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I'm trying to learn Hakka. It's not going well. I'm trying, but I just can't get it. So anyways, thank you guys for letting me be with you today. Take a little bit of your Sunday. As you can see on the video, today's not going to be a normal Sunday. For those of you that are visitors, we're glad you're here. Please come back next week. Do not judge this church by today. I'm from New York. I've been stabbed twice. I've been shot in the head. So, you know, when I talk to you today, the biggest challenge, I think, for me, and this is what I was trying to talk to the folks in the conference we've had the last couple of days, I go in and out of two different worlds. And then on Sunday morning, I'm with normal folks. Most of you look pretty normal. I can't see all of you in the cheap seats up there, but most of you look pretty normal. But I live two lives, and when a preacher says that, that's usually not a good thing. So let me explain. I have like this life, my Sunday morning life, my little cute suit life, my being on television life, writing books, teaching in university, all that life. Very churchy, very very churchy. That's one part. And then I have the other life, like you just saw in the video. I don't wear the bulletproof vest just for the video. The places I go, I'm going to Syria in a couple of months. The Israeli army will get me to the border. Once I cross over, I'm on my own. So I've got a 3-mile walk to try to find this refugee camp where we're starting a clinic, and I'm starting a Sunday school there at the camp. 4 miles on the other side is an ISIS camp. So it's like I go in and out of these two really strange existences, and then I show up here and have to try to bring these two worlds together. That's always been my challenge. I think I used to do it better when I was younger, because I've thought about it lately. When I was younger, it was better. But now I'm old. I'm old, I'm cranky, I'm tired. I've been shot in the head. I've been stabbed a couple of times. So now I don't care. Yeah, I know. Just visitors, please come back next week. This is a great church. These are great people. I love them. I'll be out of your way here in a little bit. But today, it's a rare honor for me. And I don't say this lightly. I've been in the ministry 50 years. So usually when I get up and preach on a Sunday, I get up, I show a video, and I just preach. But I want to take a minute. Just because I have the microphone and you don't, that makes the difference. I got a couple of minutes to just brag on this church. You got to understand, guys, I'm in a different church every week. Some of the biggest churches in the world and some of the smallest. So I'm kind of a church connoisseur. When you've done this long and you meet all kinds of churches, all kinds of preachers, all kinds of preachers' wives. Exactly. So when you get a chance to do this, like I've done all these years, and you really meet people that you don't just like, but you have great respect, and you honor them. And you look at the church, and the church treats you differently. Let me tell you something, and y'all better get this, because some of you don't travel like I do, so understand where this is coming from. As you can see on the video, I don't live with nice people. Where I live in New York is not in Manhattan. That's where all the sissies live. I don't live in Manhattan. I live in Brooklyn. I'm on the other side of the river, okay? Very different. One river, it's like two different planets, okay? When you cross that river, everything changes. So it's nice to be around nice people. When I was here this week, I had people that were so gracious to me. Where's Dorcas? I love Dorcas. She got me tea every day. What a great lady. The people there, the ladies, the men that I've had a chance to deal with, I don't get a chance to be around nice people much. I don't get a chance to be around people like this much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I hope you know what you have here. Some of you don't, and I'll slap you myself in Jesus' name. Because when you slap somebody in church, you got to try to make it spiritual. But I will slap you. Y'all need to understand what you've got here, because I know what you got here. And you need to give God a praise for the leadership you have in this place. Come on, give God a praise. That's why this church is doing what it's doing and is known all over the world, because of what you have allowed the leadership of this house to do. And I'm grateful that I can call all of you my friends. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you. So I don't get a chance to say that much, so, because I don't really like people too much. So when I actually find people that I like, and I really don't like many preachers, because most of them have lace on their underwear, and they're just not the kind of people that I would spend time with. But when you've got people like this, I like to brag on them, because it's good stuff. All right, anyways, let me take care of some business before I get into the message. We tried to go over this a little bit last night, but I know this is a whole different crowd. I'm going to try this again. It was a bit of a struggle last night. I was trying to figure out what his name was, and I just couldn't say it because I think it's in Hakka. I don't know. But Chow. Chong. I knew I couldn't get it. I knew I was going to miss it up. Chong. Thank you, Chong, for putting up with me. Thank you. All right. I'm going to be at my table. It's right out there by the front doors. After the service, you're going to see a couple of things. I just want to talk about it real quick. You're not really a guest speaker unless you're selling something. So, it's just part of being a guest speaker. It just goes with it. So I got some stuff back there. Two kinds of DVDs. The first one is made by BBC. It's called The Legend of Bill Wilson. They followed me around for about a week with an intern. It was just after I got shot, and they thought, man, this guy got shot in the head, and he lived. So they called it The Legend. Before, I was just this crazy guy that drives a bus, still gets in street fights. But when I got shot and lived, I instantly became The Legend. Come on, Jesus. Come on. The Legend. So if any of you want to become a legend, come visit me in New York. We'll get you shot, and then you'll become the legend too, all right? This is pretty much for all audiences. You can take this home, watch it with the kids, no problem. The other one, however, is a number 17 rated tape in this part of the world. It shows where I live, the people I live with. These are unedited. Much of this was done by ABC. In America, so it's unedited, it's uncut, It's very graphic. It's where I live. That's the other life. Life number one, life number two. Just depends on which life you're interested in. All right. So we have a few of those left, I think, back there. We've only got a couple of spots left for the Philippine trip. I started taking people a couple of years ago because they just wanted to go and see what we do and walk with me through the garbage dump, the cemetery. A lot of the video when I was holding the skull, that's in the North Cemetery in the Philippines. So they wanted to go. So I started taking people with me. So I get to take 100 a year. Our place is about 20 minutes away from the Manila airport. It sleeps 50. So if you want to go with me for a couple of days, I'll be back there. I've got some info on it. Not a lot of spots left. We have one church in Singapore that reserves 50 places. They take 50 leaders from their church every year just to go with me. So it's really funny when the Singapore people go to the garbage dump. No, you know how the Singapore people are, right? I love them and they're great, but it's what I call sanitized Singapore. You know, where it's so, it's nicer than the States, right? And so I take these people from Singapore and we're in the dump, right? And they're just, it's really funny. You guys ought to go just for the entertainment of watching the Singaporeans. They're great. And then the little kids, you know, the Philippine kids are great. And they're all naked and they're jumping up and down on the Singapore people. The Singapore people have probably never seen themselves naked. And now you've got all these little kids. It's the best. So anyways, I said all that to say, if y'all want to go with me, I'll answer questions. I'll be out there. The books, I'm not going to say much about the books. Whose Child Is This? Is kind of the staple book. It tells how Metro has become the largest organization, really, of its kind in the world. We'll be over 200,000 a week by the end of this year. And you guys know that's never been done in world history. So this tells the story. A little bit of my personal story, but mostly how the ministry got started. It'll make you laugh, it'll make you cry, but it will force you to look at yourself differently. That was the whole point of doing it. So who has not read this book? Hold up your hand. You have not read the book. Hold up your hand. What is wrong with you people? What? You haven't read? Here we go. See, wait a minute. Let me do my Asia thing. You have to do it with both hands, right? That's like what you guys do, right? It's two hands. See, I'm learning this. I'm learning this. The white boy's learning a little bit, all right? Thank you, dear. You'll like it. It's good. The other books, I don't write books because I have nothing better to do, but somebody will hear me on television or in a meeting like this, and they'll say, Pastor Bill, you need to put that in the book. So these other ones, Running with Turtles, Teflon Rhino, One-Eyed Kings, these are now used as textbooks in many universities, required reading in a lot of large churches around the world for the staff. So I'll be out there afterwards. Anybody else want a book? Yep. You can buy them right out there. Right out there. Come on. Come on, Jesus. Come on. I set you up, and you went for it, didn't you? I set you up. Last. And I always leave this to last because, honestly, guys, this is the most important thing that you're going to see when you go out there. These are pictures. Let me get a picture of that, guys. You will get a chance to see some of the kids that we have committed our lives to, literally. We are not the middleman in these. This is our entire ministry, what you'll see out there. You will have a chance to sponsor one of the kids that we work with, that our staff lives with. We don't just talk about this. Our team is there. Our team lives there. Just like I live in New York, Metro Kenya, We've got kids from Metro Kenya. We've got Metro Philippines. We've got kids from Metro New York. So I'll get you out of here in enough time. Don't get in a rush. If you feel like during the service that the Lord's kind of prompting you, poking you to take on one of these kids, stop by, take a look at it. You can actually pick the child that you would like to be responsible for. And a lot of you guys remember me from last year. You know my personal story. When my mother left me on the street corner, that was in 1960. Yep. She was an alcoholic. I'm not going to go into the details. It's neither here nor there. But we were sitting on a street corner. She said, "You wait here." She walked away. She never came back. I sat on that corner for 3 days. No food, no water. Hundreds of people drove by. Hundreds of people walked by. And the only one that stopped was a very ordinary Christian. I need you to get this part. His own son is in the hospital dying of leukemia, but he still stopped. He had problems in his own family. He still stopped. He gets out of his car, walks over to where I'd been sitting, puts his hand on my shoulder, and just says, "Are you okay?" The 183,000 last week in Metro Sunday School, you want to know how this really happened? This is the backstory right here, so don't miss this. One ordinary Christian puts his hand on the 12-year-old boy that nobody wanted and said, "Are you okay?" And I used to stutter really bad. It was horrible. I never could talk right. I tried to tell him my mother was gone and I was just hungry. He gets his wife. She brings me some food. He gets on the phone, and 5 hours, 5 hours after this meeting on the street corner, he's loading me in a church van, sends me to a Sunday school camp. I've never been to church in my life. He sends me to this camp. I heard the story of Jesus for the first time, and that was it. Look at me. Did you hear what I said? Everything changed. My life changed. I've never looked back, folks. I never looked back. Never looked back. That's what today is. That's what Metro World Child represents. That basically is what this is. You'll have a chance today when you go out there to do the exact same thing for one of these kids that man did for me. That's what this is. Just like he picked me up off the corner, those tables where you'll see the picture, that's their corner. You get it? That's the corner. You'll get a chance to pick up a kid off the corner. It's 120 ringgit a month. You can be as involved in the life of the child as you choose to be. And if you ever wondered, does this kind of thing make a difference? Because, you know, and one of the people at the conference challenged me on this because he said, "We've heard some things about World Vision and all this stuff." I said, "We're not the middleman. This is our ministry. This is the connection that we have with these kids. These are the kids we work with every day, okay? But I know you see stuff on TV. You hear stuff. I get it. I'm American, okay? So I see all that, more than you guys see, believe me, okay? So if you ever wondered, does this kind of stuff really do what it's supposed to? Give me a picture, guys. Give me this picture. This is the girl I found in March. I take the people to the Philippines every March. This is in the North Cemetery. Her name is Cherry Ann. Her mother brought her over to me and didn't speak very good English, but was trying to explain something. And I brought one of our Filipino staff over. I said, I don't understand what she's saying. And so, give me the next shot, guys. This little girl was born without an anus. So they had to cut a hole in her. Give me another shot, guys. They cut this hole, and once a week, they have to stick a tube in her to drain her. She was burned. She's 10 years old, man. She's not going to make it. She lives in the cemetery. She's got this. And I saw this, and I said, okay, we're going to do something. Give me another shot, guys, if you will. I took the picture of the girl. I took her picture that day, put it in the folder, and I said, we're going to do something. How can I say this kindly? I don't know if you can say this kindly. I have something I have said for years. The need is the call. Let me say it again. The need is the call. You see a need, you can take care of that today. I'm glad the man didn't have to pray about what he needed to do when he saw me on the street corner. Yeah, you ain't saying nothing now. Mm-hmm. I saw this thing with Cherry. I said, I'm going to get her a sponsor. One of the Singaporeans that was there with me sponsored her. We're trying to get an operation. We're going to send her back to Singapore to have the operation. I've got one surgeon that has waived all of his fees to do the operation. I've got two nurses now in Singapore that are going to do. The only thing we've got to do, we got to pay the hospital. Hospital won't waive it. But I show you this because I want you guys to know that it's ordinary people that see this, that catch this, that understand. This is missions, my friend. This is missions in the highest degree. So I'm going to be out there afterwards. If you've got any questions, talk to me, talk to the team. Pastor, thank you again. Thank you for letting us share this. It's very important. Thanks, fellas. I want to talk to you for a few minutes today. I have a clock right there. It says I've got 17 minutes. Now, I'm thinking there's not another service after this. Is no service. Nothing else. You might as well turn that clock off, Bubba, because that clock don't mean nothing to me. When I'm done, all of y'all will know it. I'm going to talk to you quickly. Turn me down on the monitors, guys. I'm getting a bit of a ring here. It's ringing in the monitors just to hear. I'm going to talk to you for a few moments. And it's ringing, guys. Turn this down just a little bit. Here, that'll help me. All right. I was in where? Atlanta, Georgia. I'd been invited by the Southern Baptist Convention to talk to their Christian education department. They knew we were the biggest Sunday school in the world. They wanted to learn some things. And so I go to this Baptist meeting, and I'm sitting in a conference room with all the big wig Baptist people. You know, I love the Baptists. Theologically, they're a little off, but I love them. They're good people. So I'm sitting here with all the Baptists, and I've got my PowerPoint, and I'm showing pictures and explaining Saturday Sunday school. Our Sunday school is 6 days a week in New York. I drive the bus on Saturday. It's all day. We pick up 1,000 kids, bring them in, have Sunday school, take them home, pick up another 1,000, bring them in. So that's kind of, it's how we do it. It's very different than the normal American Sunday school. So I'm going like 4 or 5 hours making this explanation. And the chairman of the committee, I'm not real big on committees. I guess they're important, I think, in some places, right? I've always thought a committee was the unfit appointed by the unwilling to do the unnecessary. That's what I thought. But I think some people think committees are important. So the chairman of the committee says, Pastor Bill, would you mind waiting here? Because we want to go out and talk about what you've said. Well, what am I supposed to say? No. I said, great. So now I'm sitting here all by myself in this empty room. Well, they don't know me. You don't leave people like me unattended. Okay, you don't do that. I've got that ADD thing. So I just can't sit somewhere. I got to be doing something. So they put me in a room. There's nothing there. Kind of like this room that they put me in here. Like right over there, there's a little room. There's nothing in there except chairs and a table. You guys need to work on that, all right? I'm just sitting there by myself, all right? So I'm in this room, but over here, there's like a filing cabinet. That's it. So I'm thinking, well, let me go look through their drawers, so to speak. So I'm looking through these files, and I see one file that says confidential. That's my name. That's my middle name right there. It's got my name all over it. So I pull the file out, right? I don't think it's a big deal. It's Baptist. You know, how confidential can it be? So I put the file on the table, and I'm just looking through it, and then I laugh. I laugh at myself. I'm my best entertainment. It really was confidential. Let me tell you what it was. It was great. It was a 5-year study report on why people were quitting the Baptist church. Like this whole 5-year research study. Because the people out here, they were quitting Baptist. The people up here, they quitting too. So I'm thinking, man, this is great. I'm going to learn something. Well, I knew these guys were coming back any minute. So I thought, man, if there was just a copy, if there would have been a copy machine in that room, I would have copied it. I would have prayed about it later, but I would have copied that thing because it was some pretty good information. So I'm speed reading this thing, man. Let me get to the end. What was the reason? Why are they leaving? So I get there. Watch this. See if this makes sense to you guys. So after 5 years, right, of trying to figure out why people have become, what's some words we can use? Disappointed, disillusioned, discouraged with church? Huh. See, to this day, 1,000 preachers every month quit the ministry in the U.S. 1,000. Now, it's a big country. I get that. But still, 1,000 a month close up their Bible and quit? Really? Somebody needs to be slapped in Jesus' name. But somebody, because you're telling me that the God who made the heavens and the earth called you, right? Because that's what they said when they went into the ministry. God called me. God called me. So you're telling me that the God who created the heavens and the earth, everything else is made in China. But the God, well, that's just the truth, folks. It's the truth. But the God who created the heavens and the earth that supposedly called you and you got offended or something happened and you got discouraged, shame on you. Shame on you. 1,000 a month. So I'm reading this report, man. I got to figure this out. Why is it these people are walking away? Here's what I found. Watch this. Didn't matter if it was the folks in the chairs or the people on the platform. The reasons were the same. I would have thought that the reasons between this and this would have been different. Because, you know, when you're up here, we have to deal with all you. Now, we love you, but you know how you can be. You all know how you can be. All you on the committees, okay? Y'all know how you are. I would have thought that this was different than this. I was shocked after the reading that study. It was not. But here's what happens. They get in a battle. People out here, people up here. They have a struggle. They have a battle. Doesn't matter what the problem is. That was not the issue. The issue was they got in a battle. They got in a struggle. Maybe money, family, mother-in-law. Did that strike a note with some of you? Apparently it did. Doesn't matter what the issue was, but they got in a battle, struggled, hard times, but then they got past it. Watch me now. Watch me. Then, a little later, they get in another battle, another struggle. Kind of get beat up. They get wounded in the battle. They get offended. They get hurt, and they get through it. But here's the hook in the five-year study. See if this resonates with you. We have a saying in the States. I don't know if you guys use it here, but it's a saying that says, there's a straw that breaks the camel's back. Do y'all use that here? Yep. Y'all got that? Do they use it in the cheap seats? Do y'all have it up there? All right. I'm just checking. Okay. All right. Just checking. Then there's that last battle, the last struggle that for some reason, they can't get past the last battle. That becomes the proverbial straw that breaks the back. They fold it up, quit, walk away, done. Having said that, having read the Southern Baptist study, I teach Old Testament. I came across a story here. I'm going to share it with you quickly, and then I'll get out of your way. Get your Bible open to the book of Judges, chapter number 20. The book of Judges, chapter number 20. If you don't have a Bible, slip over next to a Christian. They'll have one. And then you can just look on with them, all right? Because in this 20th chapter of the book of Judges, let me set it up for you historically, because I want to take you somewhere. They were picking men to fight in a critical, pivotal battle. Let me say it again. A critical, pivotal battle. The future of the nation, in many respects, is hinging on this battle that they're getting ready to fight. So they are picking men to fight in this battle. You got it? All right, now take a look at this. See if this makes sense. Go to the 14th verse of the 20th chapter of Judges. Judges 20, 14. I'm going to read it out of the King James. That's the one Jesus read, so that's the one that I read. Very important that you understand this. But the children of Benjamin gathered themselves together out of the cities unto Gibeah to go out to battle against the children of Israel. They're being prepped. They're being primed. The men are being picked. The battle plans are being laid out. Look at verse 15. This is the one that threw me off. And the children of Benjamin were numbered at that time out of the cities, 26,000 men that drew sword, comma, beside the inhabitants of Gibeah, comma, which were numbered 700 chosen men. Don't miss this. Don't miss it. So they got 26,000 guys that they picked from here. But then they picked 700 chosen men. Now, I'm not going to bore you with this, and I'm not going to talk to you in Hebrew. That's even more boring. Okay. But this word chosen in the Hebrew is an interesting word. It's not like, how can I say this? It wouldn't be like, all right, let me get down here and do this. Let's say I need one child to help me. Now, I have four kids right here who, by the way, you guys are being very good. You're very quiet. You're very respectful. Come on. Very nice. Now, if I just wanted to choose one kid to come up here and help me, I got four of them right here. I could just pick any one. That's not what this word chosen means here. This word chosen is an interesting Hebrew word that means these 700 men were hand-selected, hand-picked, chosen, picked for a specific reason. They weren't just pulled out of the crowd to fight in this battle. You with me? 700 hand-picked, chosen men. But watch this. This one, this is what threw me off. Look at verse 16. Those 700 chosen men were all left-handed. Now, that didn't make sense to me. Why? Because only 9% of the world's population is left-handed at any time. And that number doesn't change much. I don't understand why. If you don't know, Google it, okay? But I don't know, okay? All I know is 9% of the world's population are left-handed. So they just picked 700 men to fight in what kind of a battle? A critical, pivotal battle. Man, you better get this. Chow, Chong, stay with me here. Stay with me. All right. 700 men chosen to fight in the battle. The future, God help us, the future of the nation is hinging on the battle. What does that tell you? Obviously, they're picking people that can fight, some had some kind of attributes. 700 of them were all left-handed. Now, all of us, I think, are smart enough to know there is no superfluous banter in this word. It's all there for a reason. It's all there. Look at somebody and say, it's there for a reason. Tell somebody. It's here for a reason. Well, make no mistake. If it's here, if it's in the book, it's there for a reason, guys. So I know there's a, can I call it a hidden truth, Pastor? I think so. There's a hidden truth. There's something here. Well, I'm on it now because, you know, I'm Mr. Old Testament. I say it humbly. Nevertheless, I say it. Mm-hmm. So I'm on it now. Now, I have a very big library in New York. I don't buy books by American authors because it's all the same stuff. You buy books by American authors. My books are different, but the other guys, nah, nah. You don't want to get their stuff. It ain't no good. All right. So I have a huge library. I'm on the case, man. I'm going to find out what is the story with these 700 left-handed men. Mm-hmm. I'm looking through my commentaries. I've got one commentary. It's quite expensive, quite well respected in evangelical circles. I thought, these guys will have some insight. So I flip over. You ready for this? This is classic. It says they were left-handed because they were not right-handed. That's exactly what it said. You can't make this up, folks. You cannot make this up. I looked at that. I wanted to take that commentary and just throw it out the window. You moron. I could have wrote that. I'll write my own commentary. No joke, guys. I'm looking through all the single volume commentaries, the multiple volume. Nothing. I can't believe it. I would have thought that some theologian, some scholar, somebody could have some insight. I got zip. Well, I just finished a PhD at the University of Wales. It didn't make me any smarter. It just cost a lot of money. It's kind of a waste of money, really. I hung the PhD in my Sunday school bus. If you come to visit me, you'll see my PhD is in the bus. No, it really is. I had one of the little kids on my bus. The first week I hung in the bus, he walks in and he sees it. And he's like eight years old. And so he goes, Pastor Bill, what's that? Now, how do you explain what that is to an eight-year-old kid? I said, well, it's like I went to kindergarten a lot. You know, I went to school a lot. And he's just, you can see his head's trying to get this. He's just staring at it like this. He goes, is it important? Right? This is my life, folks. This is my life. And I said, well, not really. He goes, I didn't think so. And then he just goes, and he just goes and sits down on the bus. It's great. So I'm looking through everything. I can't find it, but I buy all my books in Europe. I get books from the 1700s, 1800s. Those preachers during that period of time were historians. They were scholars. So their mindset on exegesis was very different. The way they come across, the things that they pull, it's just different. So those are the kind of books that I read. So this is when I was working on the PhD. So I'm taken up with this 700 left-handed men because I can't find anything. So I was in this one little bookstore in Wales. It's a little village called Hay-on-Wye on the Wye River. It's all old bookstores. It's great. I love it. So I'm sitting in this bookstore, and in the basement of these bookstores, they don't have lights. You know, they're British. It goes without saying, folks. They are what they are. So they give you a flashlight. When you go into the bookstore, they give you a flashlight. You guys need to go with me on some of the stuff. It's hilarious. So I'm sitting on a stool in the basement with my flashlight, right? I found a one-volume commentary on Judges by a preacher. His name was White. Can't remember his last name. His last name was White. So I thought, well, I can't find anything, so let me see what White has to say. So I'm sitting here. I got the flashlight in my mouth. Here. And I flip over to the 20th chapter, and there it is. There it is. I knew somebody knew something about this, and I was going to stay on it. I'm reading through it, and he says, they were all left-handed because they were no longer right-handed. Okay, hold on. Because we're going somewhere. What you have here, my friends, in this 20th chapter, and this is going to get some of you in a minute, all of those men at one time were right-handed. The Hebrew army was much different, still is, than what American or Western armies. See, you get wounded in a battle, in most armies, you're out. You don't get a vote. You don't get a choice. You are dismissed. You go home. In the Hebrew army, if you get wounded in battle, they give you the option. They give you a choice. You can go home or you can stay in the battle. So what you have here in this 20th chapter is 700 men who got wounded in some battle. My God. They got wounded in a battle somewhere. Maybe they lost a finger. Maybe they lost a hand. Maybe they lost an arm. They could have gone home. They could have called 1-800-CRYBABY. Mm-hmm. And had somebody feel sorry for them. But instead, watch this. Look at this next verse. Look at this. Look at the 16th verse. After they were left-handed, the B part of the... Every one of them could sling stones at a hare and not miss. What you have here, my friends, and this is why you don't hear this preached much, and this is why you don't hear many people talk about it, because you have to understand the history behind this to understand the importance of this text. 700 men hand-picked to fight a critical, pivotal battle. Why? Because they had a chance to quit. They had an opportunity to quit. They could have walked away. They could have retired. They could have went home. But instead of quitting, it says they could hit a hair with a stone and not miss. They understood the importance. God, I want to shake somebody. Y'all got to get this. In Jesus' name, you got to get this. Instead of walking away, they said, I can't use this anymore. I've been wounded. I've been beat up. But I am going to take all of those things that the enemy threw at me to try to destroy me. And instead of it destroying me, it motivated me. It challenged me. It pushed me. It pressed me to be better with my left hand than I would have ever been if I had never been wounded at all. That's a truth behind here, that if you don't ever get anything from today, you better get this, folks. There are people walking away from church, preachers, church folk, people of all sorts, discouraged, disillusioned, offended, beat up, wounded. There's a whole group of people in America called the de-churched. It's a hyphenated term, the de-churched. Whole group of people used to be in church, used to love God, used to serve God. But something happened. Somebody didn't shake hands with them on a Sunday morning. Shame on you. Maybe somebody rolled their eyes at you. Maybe somebody didn't bring you noodles. I don't know. Something that offended you. And now all of a sudden, you're off. 700 men. Why were these men handpicked? Why? Now you know why. Because they could have left. They could have quit. They could have walked away. Had every excuse, every legitimate reason. But instead of it, they said, I'm going to take that thing that was designed to take me out of the fight, turn it around, and use it. I'm right-handed. Now, if I suddenly decided, you know, I can throw a football, I can throw a baseball, but if I suddenly decided to use my left hand, do you know how bad that would be? That, like, I can't just stand in here, just thinking, how would I, it would be like, it'd be like throwing like a girl. You know, it's that sissy thing. I just hate that sissy thing. Bothers me. But these men, instead of quitting, said, I'm going to be better with my left hand. I did some research how these guys used to practice, and this will help you with the David and Goliath story. They would take horsehair from either the mane or from the tail. They would take one end of the hair, tie it around a tree branch, take a stone, tie it to the other end. The stone would keep the hair from blowing in the wind. It would keep it straight. The guys that were really good, see, this is why this is in the text. You got it? That's why it's in the text. The guys that were good could hit a horsehair from 30 to 40 yards away. I can't even see a horsehair 30 yards away. Never mind, hit it with a stupid stone. But these guys understood the fight. They understood the battle. They got it. And instead of quitting, I'm starting to get hurt right here on my knuckles, right here, a couple years ago. I thought, man, I'm old. It's arthritis. It's just what I need. One more thing. Getting old isn't for sissies. So all of you know that. It's just not. All right? So I go to the doctor, and I'm studying to be a medical doctor now. I got the PhD. Now I'm working on an MD because I was tired of working with doctors who won't go with me to these places I go because they're a bunch of sissies. So now I'm just going to be a medical doctor too. If you see me walking in here with some rubber gloves, you need to be scared. Okay. So, anyways, that's another message. All right. So I'm working on this thing with the MD. Why? Because I realized that if I wasn't willing to take what I've got and continue to develop it. That's why I read a book a week, still, after all these years. I read one book a week. Okay? So my knuckles are hurting, so I go to the doctor. And because I think I'm a medical doctor already, I'm a medical doctor's biggest nightmare, because I think I'm smarter than what I really am. So he takes the x-rays. He said, "What did you do to your hand?" I said, I've been in some fights, but I said, it's these knuckles here. It's not this. He said, "Look at this." And I said, "Yeah, I'll look at it. I'm a doctor, sort of." So I put the x-ray up there. There's hairline cracks right here on these three knuckles. I thought, what in the world? I couldn't think of, and then I remembered for all these years, right? Because we visit every kid in the Sunday school. All these years, I've been knocking on doors, inviting kids to come to Sunday school. So it's busted, all these knuckles. So the doctor says, "You can't do that anymore. I got another 50 years left right here. Come on, Jesus. I got 50 years left. I got 50 left. I'm going to bang on doors." 700 hand-picked men could have quit, walked away, felt sorry for themselves. But instead, they said, "I understand my position in the battle. I understand the importance of the battle." And instead of walking away, they let the battle and the wound from the battle make them better than they'd have ever been. Three things quickly, and then we're out, okay? Three observations. Let's take a look at it. Number one, if you're still right-handed, you ought to be jumping up and down. Now, I know that's not an Asian thing, but some of you, before this thing is over, I'm going to get you jumping up and down. If I have to go out there and grab one of you and just jump you up and down. If you're still right-handed, if you have not been wounded in battle, you ought to be grateful, jumping up and down. But guess what? Your time is coming. You say, "Well, that's not very positive." No. It's got nothing to do with positive or negative. It's got to do with living life. If you live life, see, you younger people don't understand this. If you're under 30, you don't understand anything. So you just need to shut up. But when you get some years on you and you learn a little bit about real life, life will shut you up. It'll shut you up. You live long enough, you're going to go through some battles. You're going to go through some disappointments. You're going to go through some fights. You're going to go through things in life that you never, ever thought you'd have to go through. Burying a child. The person who said they would love you for the rest of their life and then one day comes to you and says they don't love you anymore. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You been there yet? You live long enough, my friends, and you're gonna get wounded by life. You're gonna get beat up by life. So if you're still right-handed, you haven't been wounded yet, you ought to be jumping up and down. Because it's coming, folks. It's coming. But observation number two: when you get wounded, not if, when you get wounded, you got two choices. Look at me, right here. Here it is. When you get wounded, you got two choices. You ready? Doesn't matter what anybody else tells you. They're all wrong, and I'm right. Okay, that's how this works. When you get wounded, you got two choices. Stay or go. Right, pastors? Stay or go. That's it, guys. When you get beat up, when you get wounded, and the enemy has got you by the throat, man, try to destroy you, discourage you. You got two choices. You stay or you go. Well, what you gonna do? Stay or go. That's what. You know what? I'm out of time. We gotta shut this thing down. I could stand here and just like anybody here over 50 could, and share with you the battles, the wounds. You want to see the scars? See, I can show you Here, I can show you the scars from the operations I had when my face was deformed when I was little. I can show you the scars here. I've been stabbed a couple of times. I've had three operations on my face. I got the bullet, blew the whole side of my face out. Yesterday, it was so funny. I was at the back table, and one of the guys had seen me, you know, before I got shot when I was here years ago, and he came from another church here. He came, he said, "Pastor Bill, you look better since you've been shot." I'm going, is that like an Asian thing? Or what the heck? But better. Thank you. I think it was a compliment. It just didn't quite come across that way. You guys are really funny. Y'all are really funny. That's why I love coming over here. It's great. I could stand here, show you the scars physically. I can show you the deformed rib cage I have here because I had rickets from malnutrition when I was little. I can show you all that. I can show you the x-rays. I have steel rods, nuts and bolts on this whole side of my body. I'm held together. When I say I've got a couple of screws loose, I really do. Over here. It's not a joke, okay? I actually have screws loose on this whole side of my body is metal, okay? I can tell you about that. But see, there's scars I have. I can't show you the marks. Oh, but they're there. Some of you understand that, don't you? And I don't know what hurt worse. I don't know what hurt worse. When I got shot or when I was betrayed. You tell me. Because I don't know. I don't know. Give me a picture. We got to finish this thing up. Give me a picture. I could tell you about the kids that I try to help them. The kids that I'm trying to get sponsored. I can tell you how they end up looking like this because they don't have no shoes. I can tell you those stories. Give me another picture. I can tell you about the battles. I can tell you about this little boy. This is in Indonesia. I was walking right there next to him, and I saw this little boy laying dead in the water. I never found out what happened. I don't know if somebody killed him and just threw him away, or if he died and somebody just threw him. I don't know. I don't know. Give me another picture. I can tell you about this. This was in Haiti. I took these pictures. So I got, give me the close-up, guys. Yeah. On any given week, you find 100 kids laying dead in the streets in Haiti, particularly Port-au-Prince. Should I ask you this, maybe? Yeah, I'm going to. I don't know if you have ever held a dying child in your arms and watched him die, and you're holding him, and he's just hungry. And just, and you watch his eyes go back, and he's gone. But you never done that, have you? Maybe someday. Maybe someday. Yep. I can tell you these stories. This is what I've done with my whole life, folks. This is my other life. So when the kids are crying uncontrollably from hunger, the Haiti government takes mud, mixes with water. Get that picture back up, guys. Get that last one back up that I just had because I want to go back to it. They make mud pies. This is dirt mixed with water, turn it into mud. They make these, they put them outside to dry. That's where I took the picture. They let them dry, and then they stack them in piles so that when the kids are crying of hunger, the government feeds them dirt. It makes them stop crying until they die. But you didn't know that one either, did you? Don't wonder why I'm like I am, okay? Don't wonder. Take the picture down. So when you get wounded, no matter what it looks like, no matter what precipitates it, no matter what creates or causes the wound, You got two choices, man. You got two choices. That's why people are shocked that I can still do this. That's why I told you the Christian psychiatrist told me I should not be able to put two sentences together, let alone speak in public. I can do this, maybe not very well, but I can do it because of the grace of God. Amen. I shouldn't be able to do this anymore. I shouldn't be able to do this, but by the grace of God, I can still talk to people a little bit, get them to see the need. When you get wounded, you got two choices. Stay or go, man. Give me another picture. Stay or go. I talked about this little girl last year. Left to die. Left to die. Nobody wanted her. I get it. Nobody wanted me either. I get it. Take the picture down. So, the last observation is simply this. If you choose to stay, and my prayer for this service was simple. I pray that for some of you in the house this morning, you'll make a decision to say, no matter what the devil throws at you, no matter what the enemy throws at you, as for me and my house, come on, Jesus. As for me and my house, we're going to serve God. Throw it at me, because I'm going to ask you this. What do you think at this point in my life could ever make me quit? See, that's the great part about being where I'm at. Try to make me quit. I dare you. I'll slap you myself. Try to make me quit. Throw it at me, man. I've seen 23 people murdered in front of me. You ever seen somebody get their brains blown out with a 45? No, you haven't, have you? I have. You ever see somebody get their head cut off in front of you? Yeah. We pulled 23 girls from Boko Haram a couple of years ago. It's a long story. I don't have time to go into it. And when the shooting started, and I had my night vision goggles on, and I saw one of the guards take a machete and take one of the little Chibok girls, one of the little girls, and cut her head off. Come on, folks. I told you, I'm not here to entertain you. I'm not here to entertain you, man. I'm trying to tell you something. 700 men were picked, selected, hand-picked. Why? Because they'd been wounded. They understood what it was like to be wounded, but they also understood what it took to stay in the fight. See, I have American preachers now. And they know all these fist fights and shootouts I've been in. So they call me, say, Pastor Bill, next time you're in a fight, you let me know. We'll come and we'll help. Okay, really? They got lace on their underwear. I ain't going to call them. If I'm going to get in a fight, I'm going to call somebody who's been in a few fights, who knows how to fight, who doesn't back away from a fight. Those are the people I want on my team. Those are the people I want backing me up. I don't want nobody that's never been in a fight. You get it? Give me some people that have been wounded. Give me some people that have been in a battle and they still are in the fight, still pushing, still pressing, still fighting. Those are the people that are going to make the difference. Does that make sense? So the last observation, pretty simple. If you're going to stay, if you choose to stay, why don't you just take all that stuff that the enemy has thrown at you, all of it, and say, I'm not going anywhere. This is it. I'm here. I'm in a critical, pivotal battle. And I understand it. I understand it. So, anybody here been wounded in a battle? Anybody here been wounded? Yeah? Good! I'm glad. You say, you're glad? Yeah. You know why? Because now you're qualified. God help us. Now you're qualified. You're qualified to being a part of God's army. See, God's army still uses wounded soldiers. Maybe church army doesn't. If that's another message. But God's army does. Are you with me? There's a place in God's army. Been wounded? Yeah, sure. Give me that picture back again of the little girl. Yeah. and you stick around long enough, and you stay in the battle long enough, and you stay in the fight long enough, you get some help, you get people together, you get the army together, give me another picture. And then you get to see it go from that to this. That's what it takes when you stay in the fight, when you stay in the army, and you say, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. How's this thing in Syria going to go? I don't know. I don't know. And then I go to Afghanistan after that. I don't know. But see, it doesn't matter. Because I'm in this for life. How about you? I'm in it for life, man. I'm in it for life. 700 men had every reason to quit, every reason to walk away. But they understood the fight. They understood their position. They understood the criticalness of the battle that they were in. And so here we are today. If you haven't been wounded, you will be. And when you get wounded, you make the choice. You make the choice. And if you choose to stay, take all of the stuff. Just like Paul said, everything that happened to him, he used it for the furtherance of the gospel. So, Father, I thank you. I thank you. Because, Lord, your word still speaks after all these years. And, Lord, we can look at the men and women that have gone before us and the battles and the struggles that are designed to destroy us, that are designed to make us quit, designed to make us be disappointed. Just play the song. Play the song. And Lord, I think there's some people sitting here today. Some of them are tired. Some of them have been beat up. Some of them have been wounded. Some of them sitting here, I'll bet you, some of them even thinking about quitting. But I pray that the truth from your word today will be real to them. And Lord, I thank you because turn yours down. Turn it down. I want to hear her. God, help us. So for my friends that have been wounded, tired, encourage them today because the battle's not over. Let them make a choice today to be better left-handed, be better because of the wound, because of the fight, because of the battle, than they would have ever been if they had never been wounded at all. It's a choice. It's a choice. It's a choice. I had to make it. Thank you. Thank you.